The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right. Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It is the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And today we've got Kerry Silken, the current Ring of Honor ambassador and former head of Ring of Honor, the owner of Ring of Honor, before he sold the company to Sinclair Broadcasting in 2011. The company made news recently when they announced they'd be running one last show on December 10th, which was Final Battle. And then they were closing their doors indefinitely as Sinclair figured out how to find a path forward for Ring of Honor. The whole roster was let out of their contracts. And as you know, former Ring of Honor champion Jay Lethal has since debuted at AEW. But today we'll hear the story of Ring of Honor from the guy who was there from almost day one, first as a fan, then as a silent investor, then as head of Ring of Honor, and finally as brand ambassador when Sinclair came on board. Kerry's talking about the early days of Ring of Honor, some of the talent that put them on the map, what led them selling to Sinclair, how Ring of Honor navigated the pandemic, and the circumstances that led to Ring of Honor shutting down this month. Kerry also shares his thoughts on what the future may hold for the company and whether or not he might be involved. We'll talk to Kerry Silken coming up. But before we do, reminder, if you've got some Christmas cash to burn, I've got some great ideas how you can spend it. Book yourself a cabin on Chris Jericho's Rockin' Wrestling Rager at Sea. The four-leaf clover leaving March 14th to 18th from Miami to Nassau. Go to ChrisJerichoCruise.com for all cruise info. It is going to be the vacation of a lifetime. Or you can buy yourself or your loved ones a ticket to see Fozzy. The Save the World Tour is headed out again March 31st. This time we're headed west and east, but we'll be in California starting May 5th in Los Angeles at the infamous Whiskey A Go-Go. Tickets available at FozzyRock.com. And don't forget about our legendary VIP meet and greet. It's the best of the biz. Get your tickets at FozzyRock.com. And don't forget to book your vacation of a lifetime on Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea, ChrisJerichoCruise.com. The guest list is stacked. I'll tell you all about it again on Friday, but book your cabin now. Once again, we set sail on March 14th, less than 3 months away, and it is the only cruise we're doing in 2022. All right, let's get to Kerry Silken and the story of Ring of Honor right here, right now on Talk is Jericho. All right, so end of an era happened just a few weeks ago, depending on when we were listening to this. Ring of Honor, Final Battle, and I got Kerry Silken is with us, who was the owner of Ring of Honor for many years and has been synonymous with this company that really changed pro wrestling in a lot of ways. First of all, Kerry, how was Final Battle for you, and were you still tied in with Ring of Honor in any other way other than just emotionally and legacy-wise?
First of all, thanks for having me on. I'm the current, I don't know anymore, but I was the current Ring of Honor ambassador.
Okay.
for the last 11 years since I sold the company. But yeah, I mean, Chris, 20 years. This February will be legitimately 20 years. I came in as a silent investor. You know, I knew Gabe Sapolsky.
Right.
And there were a couple other guys involved, and I wanted to get in on the ground floor. Why? Because being a lifelong wrestling fan And then becoming an ECW fan when for me, 90s wrestling was in the shitter, early 90s right. wrestling. And I was a front row ECW guy.
Yeah, oh, wow.
And besides, you know, the bloodbaths, I loved seeing you, Dean Malenko, Eddie Guerrero. You know, that was so cool. But when ECW folded, there was this void. And the original people that started Ring of Honor, I knew them and I approached them because I figured they'd be starting a company. And they were, but they didn't need my help. Well, about 6 months later, they came to me. You know what they needed? Money. Mm-hmm. So I was fine with that. I got involved behind the scenes, and it's weird, and this is never spoken about. And as a rock and roller, you'll appreciate this. As good as the early Ring of Honor wrestling was, and the Low Keys and the Samoa Joes and the Spankies and so on and so forth, and bringing in Eddie Guerrero, bringing in Super Crazy, as good as it was, there was zero production.
Hmm.
And I went to Gabe. Now, Gabe's favorite band is Rush, and he's a rock and roll guy. And so I said, Gabe, we need some lighting. I mean, he goes, no, Carrie, I don't want you wasting the money on that. I go, Gabe, you go to shows, you go to Rush, you go to this. He liked Yes, he liked heavy metal. I said, what happens when any show starts? What happens when a movie starts? He goes, well, the lights go out. I go, what happens when the lights go out? He goes, yeah, the people pop. So we brought in, I don't want to say rudimentary, but sort of rudimentary lighting. And as soon as we did that, what a difference it made to the whole environment. And some incidents happened in 2004 of a scandalous nature, and people right. don't know what we're talking about, could Google it.
Right.
But it's funny, Chris, if that didn't happen, I probably would have backed out because the company was just bleeding money. But mm-hmm. after that happened and I had full control, I felt better. And then I just continued to bleed money, but at least.
At least you felt better about it.
Right.
Well, in what way was it bleeding money? Because as we know, it's hard to start a wrestling company. It's hard to run a wrestling company. But what were you coming up against budget-wise that was causing you to bleed that money?
The only real income we had, besides the paltry gates, and was merchandise. And at the time, it was still the VHS era.
Right.
And in 2003 and 4, the DVD era was coming in. So everything had to be converted. And when we started to get a little buzz and the shows were being, you know, getting a buzz, people wanted to see them. And they, you know, that was what would take in the money. Even though it was 4, 6, 8 weeks late after the show, they wanted to buy the DVD to see what they had read about.
Mm.
And that was, but it did not cover anywhere close to the bills. Thank God I was single. Thank God I wound up being somewhat successful in the ticket brokering business, because my ticket agency, you know, funded our Ring of Honor. And it was out of the passion for the wrestling, my ego. And I knew I had a good thing. I knew we had a good product, but it was just impossible to make money.
So who were the top stars kind of in those early years when you first started getting involved?
Well, the original batch was Low Key. Bryan Danielson was on the first Ring of Honor show.
Oh, wow.
One of the Briscoes, because the other Briscoe was only 17 and he couldn't wrestle in Pennsylvania. Spanky, Brian Kendricks, Paul London. This was the original batch, which, and then by the time I was more involved and eventually the full owner, this is when Punk came in. Mm. This is when Colt Cabana came in. This is when Nigel McGuinness came in, and Samoa Joe, and the list goes on and on.
So it really is kind of interesting because you mentioned ECW, which had basically closed in about 98 or so. Obviously, there's no AEW at the time, and there's really no WCW at the time. I'd gone out of business too, so there's really only WWE's the only place in town. So Ring of Honor really could bring something different to the table, the same way that AEW did, you know, almost 20 years later, to differentiate this company from the WWE company. Wrestling is awesome. The guys are awesome. So how are you able to sustain the company when you just said earlier it's impossible to make money? And what was kind of the first breakthrough where you did start making a little money?
Well, believe it or not, it never, ever, ever made money. There was a few shows, WrestleMania weekends, where we had good gates in Chicago. But in the, you know, if you looked at it on an annual level, it always lost money. But I was trying. And the first thing we did beyond the DVDs, and we were doing it ass backwards because we had no TV. We met a guy named Ken Gelman, and he was involved in, at the time, these recorded pay-per-views that were like on in demand.
Right.
Remember those?
Yeah.
And he had Dish Network. So we did, we would record the so-called pay-per-view, which wouldn't air till 6 weeks later. But dig this. The first couple of them, we did like, I know these are small numbers, but for us it was huge. We did like close to 15,000 buys. Mm. It was over the course of days and weeks, but it was impressive. And but we needed TV, and we never were able to get it until Andrew Simon from HDNet, now Access.
Yeah, I know Andrew.
Okay. He approached us, and I was like, wow, finally. This is around 2008. So Andrew approaches us, and he's funding for the TV to do the TV tapings, which was a big help, of course. But this was the problem, and no disrespect to Andrew. Little did I know that HDNet only had like 3 or 4% of cable penetration. They were available on the Dish Network, you know, channel 822.
Right.
So I thought the first time it aired, man, the DVD sales and the merch sales, the online sales are just going to take off. And I was wrong. But I, you know, still, I tip my hat to those guys. I appreciate what they did for us. The deal lasted like 2 years. Jim Cornette came in, helped produce the TV. And he'd been in a number of Ring of Honor dates prior. And by having Jim there, Jim knew Gary Juster. Mm-hmm. And Gary Juster, who I guess we should tell the fans, is a longtime NWA, WCW, he booked the buildings.
Yeah, booking agent, right, yeah.
You know Gary?
Yeah, of course, from WCW, right. And from around, absolutely.
So Gary knew Joe Koff, who worked for Sinclair. Joe Koff was a longtime wrestling fan. And back in the 80s, did you ever hear of, or did you ever see the Battle of the Belts? It was like in 84, 85. It was done in Florida, sort of like a pre-recorded pay-per-view, or maybe it was on some of the affiliates. Anyway, Joe Koff liked wrestling. And he went to the Sinclair Brass. It took almost 15 months to get the deal done, right? And it wasn't like they were paying me a lot of money, but it was the corporate world, which I know you have familiarity with. They stick flashlights every which way, and you know where they stick them in your mouth, and you know what. And it seemed like it was never going to happen because I wanted to get out. You know, I wanted to get out, but I just couldn't bring myself to do it. And not to be redundant, thank God for the ticket business in that era, in the early 2000s into the mid 2000s, was very good. This was before tickets, where every ticket was for a major show was, you know, a minimum price of $300.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. But it funded ROH, but I wanted to get out, and it worked out perfectly because I was able to get out, but yet they still wanted me around because I was the so-called face of ROH.
Right, the figurehead, yeah.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
So when going back to kind of pre-Sinclair, because I want to talk about both eras, when you mentioned that, you know, DVD sales were one of the cornerstones of your financial, you know, situation, was it slowly getting smaller as the advent of YouTube started, or was YouTube even a thing back in 2008, 2009? Were people still buying the DVDs rather than just being able to see them online, I guess is what my question is.
They were buying the DVDs, but I got smartened up, although I ignored the advice, in 2005, and I'll tell you, or six, I'll tell you a quick story. Ken Gelman, the guy that put together the tape pay-per-views, brought us to these bigwigs in New York City. These guys had connections with Disney, this, that. Anyway, we go there, and the guy he brings us to says, you guys are doing this backwards. You need TV before you do pay-per-views, even if they are pre-recorded. We're like, well, we don't have TV. Anyway, within the course of that conversation, Chris, one of the guys there who was probably in his 30s is explaining to me, you know, Carrie, in a few years, people are going to be looking on their phones, watching movies, watching concerts. Now, this is this is 2005, 2006. Well, when I left that meeting, I'm like, this guy's nuts, right?
Right.
That's what I know. So, but yeah, to your point, as the time went on, the DVD sales were shrinking, and you know, isn't it nice? I'm sure you have DVDs in your house.
Sure, of course.
Right, as a showpiece, but you know, eventually they were extinct.
So, who was booking at this time frame over the 8-9 years that you owned the company?
Do you know Gabe Sapolsky?
Yes.
Gabe Sapolsky was the original Ring of Honor booker.
Right.
And you know that the life expectancy of bookers isn't very, very strong.
Yeah.
But he lasted until 2008. You know, Gabe did a phenomenal job, but it's like he's the son of Paul Heyman.
Yeah.
So he inherited some of the negative, angry traits of Paul Heyman.
Right.
You know, like just, you know, like showpiece kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Just to get angry, to get angry.
Right.
And I wasn't crazy about that behavior. His booking was fantastic. We had so many guys going through, but I had to make a change. And that led to Adam Pearce.
Oh, okay.
Who's now a big shot, a big macher, as my Jewish grandmother would say, on WWE. But yeah, Gabe did a great job. You know, we got lucky along the way, Chris, because Noah approached us. Pro Wrestling Noah approached
us in Japan
in 2005, and it was like, why do they want to talk to us? Well, they wanted a presence in the United States. We garnered a relationship with them. This is with Mara Fuchi and Kenta and Morishima. And it was expensive, but it worked. And it really elevated our stock. We got to go to the UK in 2005 and 6, and then eventually with the help of Noah, and we were working a little bit with Dragon Gate, but that's another story. We got to go to Tokyo twice, 2007, 2008.
This so is as a Ring of Honor tour, a Ring of Honor with Noah?
Right. Yes, gotcha. Right. And it was a combination show. It was sort of the golden era. This is like when Tyler Black, you know, Seth Rollins was elevating. Nigel and Brian were the cornerstones of the company. The Briscoes were so well established and just kicking ass. And Austin Aries. I mean, Samoa Joe was gone, but overall, you know, our crew has always been good. And it was like they put the Thanksgiving fork in us so many times. For example, we had the CM Punk Samoa Joe trilogy. Maybe you're aware of it, maybe you're not.
I've heard of it.
Was sort of after that rough patch we went through. And it really got a lot of attention. And, well, there goes Samoa Joe leaving for TNA. Oh, well. And shortly after that, who the hell left after that? Oh, Punk. We had Punk. Punk was fabulous. Well, Punk gets a developmental deal in WWE. 2006. Bye-bye, Punk. But what I learned and what I saw happen right in front of my eyes, and you've seen it 1,000 times, it elevated other guys. It opened up space for other guys. So this way, the Jamie Nobles and the Austin Aries and the Seth Rollins and the Kevin Steen / Owens and the El Generico Sami Zayns and the Davey Richards and the Eddie Edwards. And we can go on and on. It opened up spots. Plus, we had, you know, Kenta, Marufuchi, not on every show, but on a lot of them. So every time this would happen, people are like, they're done. But the biggest one of all was in 2009. Because simultaneously, in September, I mean, I had notice, both Brian Danielson and Nigel McGuinness were leaving. And I'm like, what the hell are we going to do? And I called Carnett, who just got fired from Impact or quit, one of the two, TNA. Mm-hmm. And I had Jim come to New York as a surprise. I also had Homicide, who New York was, who I didn't mention yet. I'm delinquent in mentioning Homicide. I had him come back for that show as a surprise. And it was sort of like a magic trick. As bad as it was to lose, right? As bad as it was to lose Brian and Nigel, when they saw Carnett and the way he was presented, when they saw Homicide and the way he was presented, it was like it put a Band-Aid on it. And we went from there.
Well, that's the thing, and obviously Jimmy would know that, and Paul Heyman would know that. Is it kind of frustrating, or is it just the way it is when you build the guys up? Do you kind of know at a certain point they're going to leave and go to WWE?
Absolutely. Yeah. And by the way, this is never spoken about, and I don't ever think I've mentioned it, even on my podcast. I think we were the only company that it might have been a 12 or 16 or 18 month period of time that provided insurance.
Wow.
To, it wasn't all of them, but you know, the big names, we had an insurance policy in the office, but yes, you got used to this. It was incredible attrition. I mean, the attrition rate was just ridiculous.
Right.
You know, and WWE, even more than TNA, was watching us and watching these guys and cherry picking, you know, along the way. You know, there's Tyler Black, Seth Rollins, really, you know, kicking ass. Well, they're calling him. And you know, it went on and on. Well, then here comes Adam Cole, and here comes Kyle O'Reilly, and here comes this one and that one. And the Jay Lethal, how could I forget him? Mm. Jay Lethal got released. He came back. Cabana got released. He came back. So there was this revolving cast. It's like of an all-star band.
Right. Anybody can come up and jam whenever they're in town.
Absolutely.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Two questions. How many shows were you running a week? And were you having guys under contract, or were you just paying them per show at this point?
Yes, I had to put guys under contract, and I was very liberal. To your first question, we ran like 50 dates a year.
50. Okay. Wow.
50 dates.
Yeah.
So
I got
we would
you.
Do a weekend, you know, Chicago, Detroit. Mm-hmm. 3 weeks later, New York, Philly. 3 weeks later, Boston and Toronto. And I had to have guys under contract. So the Nigels, the Bryans, the top name guys, the Seth Rollins were under contracts, and the rules of the contracts were you could do anything you want except go to WWE, go to TNA, and you can't do any kind of the few independent pay-per-views that existed at the time.
Gotcha.
But along the way, a guy like, let's just say Nigel, in 2006. Hey, mate, I got an offer to go to a tryout, WWE. They just want to look at me. And I was like, go ahead, you know. And I wasn't like, you know, if these guys got an opportunity, it's not like they just jump and run. But if they got an opportunity, I would allow them to explore it. Yet at the same time, I didn't want to lose them. But
right,
maybe I'm too nice a businessman.
No, I remember because what Ring of Honor was, like you said, the newer version, the modern day version of ECW. And when I was in ECW, once again, short time, I think 22 matches I had there. And when I got the opportunity to go work for WCW, I told Paul Heyman, I don't want to go. And then he goes, well, don't. It's very simple. If you don't want to go, don't go. And I'm like, well, of course I want to go, but I don't want to go. I knew it was going to be a stop for me in order to go to the next stop. And I'm sure you probably found that from a lot of guys coming through Ring of Honor as well.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but ECW didn't give you a full-time contract.
No. I don't think they even had anybody under contract back then.
But yeah, I mean, I did the best I could. We had a really good locker room. You know, it's funny, the Young Bucks, who are like I call them my West Coast sons.
Oh, yeah.
Or sometimes I put on your show, I put on AEW, or I would put on Raw a few years ago, or NXT. And there's Kevin Steen, there's Generico, there's this one, there's that one. And it's like I'd take a picture, or if I go visit them at a show, and my caption was always all my children. Right? Two of my best children and my favorite guys were the Bucks.
Mm-hmm.
And Adam Pearce brought the Bucks in. I remembered him telling me, I go, where do they live? He goes, California. He goes, they're only $75 a night. I go, but it's California. He goes, I got him on Spirit Airlines. it's only eight stops. So the Bucks came in. I got to know them really well. I'm so happy for their success. I'm happy for everyone's success. You know, it's just been such a crazy, crazy ride. But, you know, during my time at ROH, when it was clicking so well, And like, do you mind if I throw out a couple names, please?
Please.
To this day, we still, and it was up to this goes to the very last show. We have, no disrespect to Justin Roberts, the best ring announcer in wrestling, my opinion, Bobby Cruz, the best. And we had the best referee in wrestling, Todd Sinclair. They weren't with us since day one. Bobby came in. I don't know if you even know about this. Steve Corino used to do these entrances with the ring announcer, where the ring announcer, it's right up your alley, a list.
Yeah. You know? I think that's where Jimmy Jacobs got that idea, right? Was from Steve Corino. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And so, but Bobby and Todd, I felt so bad for them this weekend. I mean, there was such a mixed bag of emotions, but yeah, you know, the feeling, it was that, you know, Ring of Honor's always had, yes, there was always a bad apple here and there, but it had that down home family feeling. Right. Come on, let's go out and get it. You know, let's win one for the Gipper kind of thing.
You mentioned TNA a couple times. Were they more, because I think you guys had a talent relation agreement. not a fan, huh? I was going to say.
Well, they didn't deal with us. I'll talk about it.
Yeah.
They didn't deal with us very nicely.
Because you were supposed to have a talent exchange. Is that what you're talking about?
Or
just in general?
It was totally one-sided.
Gotcha.
And I've met and spoken a lot to Jeff Jarrett later on. Who knows when he was actually there and he wasn't. But, you know, and I'm not mad at Scotty D'Amore or this one or that one. But we didn't get treated very nice by them. Leave it at that.
Gotcha. So before we move into the Sinclair, I want to ask, you mentioned Eddie Guerrero, and I forgot that Eddie came to Ring of Honor, and that was part of kind of his reestablishing himself in the business after he got fired from WWE to show that he could be trusted. So tell us about how he came in and what it was like to have Eddie around.
Eddie was on the very first show. I was there.
Wow.
I was there as a fan, Chris. And I hope I don't mess this up. I think it was Eddie Guerrero against Super Crazy. And that was the two big fly-ins. Everybody else, once again, it wasn't my company yet. Everybody else were these New York guys. And then, what's the guy's name? Rudy Gonzalez from Texas, right?
Yeah.
Out of the Shawn Mike. They shipped up Brian Spanky. They shipped up Paul London. They shipped up this one. I think Christopher Daniels. But anyway, I was at that show. And the Guerrero match was fabulous. And Gabe made a decision to have, I think it was Danielson, Spanky, and Loki, or Danielson, Loki, and Paul London go on after that in a three-way match, which was ballsy. But that's why Gabe was good. But yeah, to have Eddie Guerrero was fabulous. And another thing I really enjoyed during my tenure, I'm a guy that likes history, whether it's wrestling, baseball, rock and roll, the Civil War, I like history. So I used to like to bring in legends. We had Harley Race. We had Bill Watts. We had Bruno Sammartino, Jim Cornette, Bobby Heenan, Ricky Steamboat, and Foley. Mick Foley worked like seven shows with us.
Mm.
I'm going to tell a story. He might get mad. Mick comes in, and this is after that little aforementioned scandal, right? We do a shoot interview with him. And I had read in his book that he just mentioned in his first book how he was such a huge Jethro Tull fan. So, which I am too. And so after the shoot interview, and you know him, he's a huge Christmas fan.
Right.
But guess what? The shoot interview was in like September. Well, it is 2004. Tull releases a Jethro Tull Christmas album. And he didn't know about it. And I had the CD, and I gave it to him. And that started our little connection. And then he agreed to come to make a live appearance. And he was expensive, right? I don't need to say the number, but he was very expensive. But it's Mick Foley. But he wasn't going to wrestle. You know, he'll do some kind of little angle, but, you know, anyway, it was in the New York area. He enjoyed it so much that the next loop for us, this is a loop, Chicago, Detroit, or Dayton and somewhere, I wanted to use him. And Ricky Steamboat was coming also, but I couldn't really afford him. And I called him up and he said, look, I love what I saw there. Don't tell anybody, Carrie, but I'll do it for X. But you can't tell anybody. And we had him for like, we had him and Ricky Steamboat for like six or seven shows. And I remember it was in Dayton, and they're sitting in the locker room. They're just talking. And Gabe Sapolsky comes over to me and he's like hitting me like, Carrie, look, it's friggin' Mick Foley. of course, but yeah, I loved bringing in the legends, whether it was, and he turned out to be a dear friend, Bushwhacker Luke, right?
Yep.
You gotta respect history, you know? And I'm glad that AEW does.
Right. No, it's important. I hate when WWE does it. They'll bring in somebody, a legend, and then end up shitting on them or making them look bad. It's like, that's not what people don't want to see that, you know?
They have talk about revisionist history.
Yeah.
You know, there is. So I'm glad to see you guys, you know, carrying on with that. It's very important.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So when you finally sell to Sinclair, what were the major differences that you noticed right away?
Well, the reason Sinclair bought it was at the time they had 70, 80 affiliates. So in other words, they had, Channel 28 in Des Moines, a Fox affiliate. Channel 7 in Oklahoma City, a CW affiliate, but they were owned by Sinclair. So they're going to produce an hour of TV to put on these 70 stations, which by the way is now 200, and they're going to be in the local markets. And that's why they wanted the company. And it's funny. I love Jim Cornette. I'm probably one of the only guys in history that he never had a blowout with. That was a look, but Jim was a little, when the deal was starting to go down, Jim says, Carrie, do you know what Vince McMahon would pay to have 70 local affiliates? Well, that boat had left the station. And so, you know, the idea was, well, now we're on in Des Moines. People are going to watch it. We can go to Des Moines, right?
Right.
It didn't happen. But so Sinclair got their hour of TV. Continued doing the live shows, still released DVDs in the beginning. And dude, there were a lot of growing pains with Sinclair, a lot of them. You know, they had a hot potato in their hand, and that's not necessarily good. Maybe it was a hot message. But there were a lot of growing pains. But you know, this is a multi-billion dollar company. And I love Joe Koff, who is the corporate head of Sinclair. And I'm not going to, you know, there's no reason, you know, he's been nothing but gracious to me and nice the whole time. But unless they got on live TV, as you know, it's tough.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we never were able to do that.
What was Sinclair's kind of MO for buying Ring of Honor? They just want the original content?
Well, no, they wanted that to produce an hour of TV for those at the time 70 or 80 affiliates, as opposed to buying Three's Company or Seinfeld. And they garnered revenue from the advertising, I think. And but they got that hour of content. And it never was uniformed. Like, if they would have had every station play it
right
at Saturday morning at 11, like the old days when you would watch wrestling, then roller derby. But it never happened.
Yeah, you're right, because it was syndicated, like you said. So it would be all over the place on the map. If it would have been, like you said, every Saturday at noon or every Wednesday at 9 on this channel. Because it was hard, because, you know, I'd never heard of Sinclair. And you go through your channels. Well, who's, you get 1,000 freaking channels. Who knows which one is which at this point, you know? So I always wonder if it turned out as big as they wanted it to, or they was hoping for.
We certainly know the Springsteen song, 57 channels and nothing
and
on.
Nothing on, exactly.
Now there's 857 channels. But at the same time, they were trying. We were doing pay-per-views along the way, doing like 4 a year. We also were trapped originally with the internet pay-per-view thing, which was complete disasters. That's where Jim Cornette lost it.
What happened?
The feed would go out in the middle, you know, and there's nothing you can do. You were too busy with your career at WWE, but there was a company called Go Fight Live. And they were the cutting edge internet technology, and it was garbage, but it worked sometimes. Eventually, we started doing the traditional on your cable, on, you know, also the website, which still exists, Ring of Honor's Honor Club, which is a good deal, and it had the old content, a lot of the old content, and you were able to watch, you know, the pay-per-views through that. Or, like, I recorded Saturday night on my cable. I don't know about you, but I did that Chromecast thing. I could figure it out
sometimes. Yeah, right.
But I'd rather just record it. So, yeah, we would do like 4 a year. And then the pandemic came. You know, and I don't want to speak for Joe Koff, but the plan was going to be, we're going to be doing weekly TV. Where it was going to be, I don't know. Even if it was on YouTube, like AEW Dark, right?
Right.
But to get one uniform place, and then the pandemic came. That was it. That was it. We had 6 or 7 months off. We were showing best of content. And we came back with this empty arena stuff. We did the pure title division was... Part was a tournament we did after the pandemic. The women's, we created a women's division. And to their credit, they paid everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody got paid. This is unprecedented.
Right.
So you got to give Sinclair credit. And,
but when you're looking at the bean counters, though, you know, because Sinclair, you know, whoever's running the accounting department, probably don't care which show is which. They just see a name of a show and numbers, and seeing how much money they spent on Ring of Honor during this and not getting anything really back, that probably put Ring of Honor on the chopping block.
I'm sure. Maybe we'll be back in some form. You know, we're supposed to have a show WrestleMania weekend. Maybe it's not announced, and it's breaking news for your thing. But So we'll see. You know, let's hope that that happens.
Let me ask you, so was it Sinclair that made the decision to, I don't want to say pull the plug, but to kind of end the operations as the way they are?
Yes.
Okay. Gotcha. Probably because of all the money they spent during the pandemic. Well, let's go back to when do you think Ring of Honor was at its peak from a, I guess, from a business wise, from perception wise?
Probably in 2006 through nine. As I said before, we got to go to the UK. That was a huge deal for us. And Japan, we were the darlings at the time. We were the cool kids at the time.
Wow, yeah.
And then we get approached by Darren Aronofsky, who's doing the wrestler movie. And Darren Aronofsky, his thought process was the closing scene. He wanted it, you know, obviously you've seen the movie, yeah, right? He wanted that character to have that last match at what looked like a prestigious kind of independent.
A big show, yeah.
He couldn't work with WWE. He could TNA, I guess. I don't know if he spoke to them, but he's based in Brooklyn, so he wanted to do everything in the New York, New Jersey area.
Right.
And he approached us, and they came to a show at the Hammerstein, and the movie wasn't even a go yet. And he wanted to, can we come and look around? Is it okay if we go in the back? I'm like, sure. And then his right-hand man calls the day of the show and says, listen, we're coming and we appreciate it, but we're bringing someone and we don't want the word to get out. I'm like, fine. Well, it was Nicolas Cage.
Wow.
And Nicolas Cage was slated to be in the Mickey Rourke role.
Really?
The problem in the end was he wanted more money than the whole budget of the movie. So Nicolas Cage comes, and there I am, little old Carrie Silkin sitting in the back in the dressing room. And I got Aronofsky on one side, and I'm looking across from Nicolas Cage. And I'm, you know, give me Al Pacino. Give me Dustin Hoffman. Give me Robert De Niro. I'm an older guy. Right. Nicolas Cage is a great actor, but I wasn't like a huge, but wasn't like right. I'm meeting a friggin' Mick Jagger. Holy shit. So there he is. So we're in the back and everyone, you know, Nigel's there, this one, everyone's being cool. And Nicolas Cage looks over at me across the table in the back. And he says, he points to like Nigel. He goes, why is he a good wrestler? I go, well, I mean, he's got a great personality. He knows how to wrestle. He's from Britain. He brings a different style. Then he points over at Necro Butcher. He goes, why is he a good wrestler? I go, well, he does like a hardcore thing. You know, it's like a blood and gut style. And he's going around the room, pointing at this one and pointing at that one. And I'm running out of answers. Finally, he stands up. And he's very thin. He's like 6'2". And he's thin. He goes, yeah. So what would make me a good wrestler? And I'm like, well, you know, guys like Bret Hart and Chris Jericho and Shawn Michaels, you know, they aren't like the biggest guys, but, you know, they have personality and they know how to work a crowd. And I'm sure you could do that. So that was my experience with Nicolas Cage. So they brought Mickey. So we got signed on to the movie when the budget got cleared. They brought Mickey Rourke in. And that was a great experience doing that. And I thought, holy shit, Mickey Rourke gets nominated for an Academy Award. Then in the end of the movie, Bruce Springsteen did the close it, the walkout song. I'm like, this is huge. And the Ring of Honor logos and banners were everywhere in the movie. They didn't, you know, it's fine.
Yeah.
But you know what, Chris? Didn't mean a damn thing.
Yeah.
Didn't push the needle. I'm thinking the college kids are going to come out. the hipsters, everyone, you know, the movie got, you know, it was popular, but you know, maybe if Mickey Rourke would have won the Academy Award.
what do you think that it was that kind of limited Ring of Honor from getting bigger and getting that spotlight that you're talking about?
My era,
just in general, because it always kind of just hit a certain level and that was it.
We never were able to get live TV.
Gotcha.
And you know, if we play Monday morning quarterback, and it is Monday morning, you need live TV in this day and age. What do you think?
Same thing. I think it was always kind of slotted as a modern day ECW, which in the 90s was cool. But as you move on to the 2000s and 2010, the look of it just kind of looks small. And there's a niche for it. But I think once New Japan kind of got more TV and kind of infiltrated, I really think when Cody and the Bucks, and I know Kenny wasn't there all the time, but Hangman, when AEW began and took kind of that core group out, that probably hurt as well.
Yeah.
But I think, like you said, it never had the big time national television.
Right. When in the 2015, 16, 17 era, when Cody came in, maybe it was 16, 17.
Yeah.
And the Bucks came. The Bucks were, you know, because of the Bullet Club thing.
Right.
That was a big deal. And we started popping for us some good houses. What's a good house for us? 2,000 people. WrestleMania weekend, we did 7,000 people in New Orleans. And there was one in Orlando. We did about the same amount. But that was in the era with, you know, Cody and the Bucks and Kazarian and, you know, Lethal. But you know, Lethal was there. The Briscoes were there. You know, the old school Ring of Honor guys. And then you got them all.
Let's talk a little bit about Final Battle. Just kind of tell us the genesis of that show, because like I said, I'm currently in London, so I didn't see the show, but I read the reports and you had, you know, FTR showing up and you had a lot of special surprises. AEW guys were involved. How important was this show and how were you able to put it together to have all these guys on it?
Well, our booker, Delirious,
mm-hmm.
he reached out and Deonna Purrazzo made an appearance. Braun Strowman made an appearance. How about that?
Yeah.
And not to mention FTR. And
Jay Lethal was in the main event. He replaced Bandito, and, right? Yeah.
You know, I'm very close to Lethal. And he'll hear this. And when he powdered out a little early, I thought, I said, Jay, you can't stay to the final bat. This is before, you know, you can't stay to final because Carrie, the wrestling market is very flooded with wrestlers. You know, they talk about it's a golden era, but there's guys, you know, now there's going to be another 30, 40 guys on the market. You want to, you know, it's all right. All right. So it was poetic justice to have Jay back, you know, with Bandito and not feel having testing positive for COVID. So yeah, Lethal and Jonathan Gresham, but yeah, Chris, it was forgetting the melancholy part of it. It was a magic night. The matches were great. The Briscoes against Matt Taven and Mike Bennett, you know, Dave Meltzer would probably give it 4 stars.
Mm-hmm.
Phenomenal. And that we had one blood and guts match, which not no blood, but a lot of guts, which was, I don't know if you know these guys, Kenny King and Shane Taylor.
I know Kenny.
Yeah, Shane Taylor is excellent. And the women's title, this very young girl, Roxy, against Willow, very good. Everyone was represented on the card and culminating with Lethal and Gresham, you know, as the main event. And hopefully, you know what, if nothing else, when you have some time, YouTube to check out that main event, because Jonathan Gresham is so good. and Lethal is so good. And they're both scientific wrestlers. And it was just fantastic. And it was very emotional. And towards, as it was coming down to the end, because the pay-per-view is going to cut off, right? The whole roster, babyface, heels, it didn't matter. Everybody came out to ringside. And Jonathan Gresham kept the belt. And it was a hell of a moment.
Well, you guys had quite a few of those. That was the one kind of thing, like you said, the melancholy side of it. But you booked it as if you were moving forward. I mean, having Adam Scher appear and having Gresham get the title. And I think the Briscoes won the titles again for the 12th time or whatever
The company's not, you know, it's being reinvented. Let's hope. You know, as far as what I know now, these titles are going to be defended in other places. Jonathan Gresham, he's booked in a number of places, including he's doing a really cool show in Atlanta. The name of his new show or promotion is Terminus.
Terminus, I heard that.
He's got a very good, he's getting a really good buzz. And, you know, he's going to be there. The kid that's the pure champion, the pure belt champion, Josh Woods, is going to be there. I'm not sure about the Briscoes, but and I believe the girl Roxy is going to be there. But so these titles are going to still be active despite the hiatus.
Right. Because now all the contracts are done. So everybody is free to go elsewhere. No, not necessarily. Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, it is.
Some guys have contracts that rolled over and, once again, tip of the hat to Sinclair. They're getting paid, I believe, through the end of, like, for the next 4 months.
Gotcha.
So, but yeah. So the belts or the title holders are alive and well, at least in name.
As we start to wind down, are there some talents that now are available that maybe we're like Jay Lethal was saying, I'll stay in Ring of Honor for as long as they'll have me. Suddenly Ring of Honor ends, he has to go and come to AEW. Are there some other talents that you think will show up elsewhere? Ones that you think, okay, these guys, now that Ring of Honor is gone for now, will definitely move on?
Well, I don't know if you're familiar with Mike Bennett.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Maria Kanell, you know.
Yep.
Yeah. He and Matt Taven are wonderful. I don't expect you to know some of these names, but Vinnie Marsaglia, I can't pronounce his last name, Vinnie Marsaglia, but Vincent, he does a sort of like a horror movie kind of gimmick, but he's great. He's great. The aforementioned Jonathan Gresham, he's gonna move on. Shane Taylor, these guys are good. Once again, Kenny King, these guys are all very viable talents, not to mention the Mexican talent we've been using. This Bandito, who wasn't at the, is phenomenal. Dragon Lee, Roosh, who had the Ring of Honor belt prior. And so, yeah, there's, you know, hopefully Tony Khan welcomes some of these other guys. Yeah, we'll see what happens.
Well, and that's the thing, because I had Ring of Honor, the very first Jericho cruise was with Ring of Honor. I think you were on it, right?
I wasn't on it. I was supposed to know, but
okay. So I know a lot of those guys and work with Joe Coffin, with Craig. So, you know, once again, it's great to see the guys doing so well and great to see him move on. So last few questions for you. In your opinion, what are some of the greatest matches you ever saw in Ring of Honor?
I'll tell you the greatest match.
Okay.
And if you've never seen it, watch it. Samoa Joe against Kobashi.
Oh, wow.
In New York City. This is before, there was our first New York City show. And we had a building that was up in like Spanish Harlem. And it wasn't a bad building, but guess what? Something happened and they didn't pay the rent. So we were scrambling. And one of our a dear friend of mine, and he did it. He was at when you were in Europe, but he made an appearance at AEW in a dark match as a manager, the Prince Nana. He's running around New York City, and he finds a building where the Hammerstein is, and there's the Manhattan Center on top, and there's that hotel,
mm-hmm.
right? That half-ass hotel. Well, they had a ballroom, and the ballroom fit like 500 people. I mean, jammed in. And we used that. And thank God things were the way they were, because you could duke the fire commissioner. Right? We had 800 or 900 people, but this, you know, this is obviously we had the relationship with Noah, but to get Kobashi, you know, and I'm not an expert on Japanese wrestling, but I was like, wow. So that match, if you watch it, it was the only Ring of Honor match where there's no commentary, because it didn't need it.
Wow.
And this was like, did you see the recent Muhammad Ali documentary? The new one?
I haven't seen it yet.
Ken Burns one.
I haven't seen it.
Well, the reason I mention that, you've seen these fights, Ali Frazier, you know, Ali Foreman. You know, they talk about the big fight feel. And this was the big fight feel. This was in 2005. And it's like, I remember, you know, Samoa Joe, I wasn't real close with him, but we were friendly. And he was sitting behind the curtain, not in the locker room, for like 2 hours. And Kobashi didn't even show up to the building till like, if the match started at 10:30, he showed up at like 9:45.
Wow.
And they just went out and they did it. It's an absolute classic. That's be my all-time favorite match.
That's amazing, too, because your fans were always so super excited, throwing streamers and all that sort of stuff. They're really great, hardcore, knowledgeable wrestling fans.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and then to see Brian, Brian and Nigel, you know, Nigel McGuinness. It's just a shame he never had a longer career, but him and Brian Danielson used to have these wars. And there's a classic match from Liverpool where these guys are headbutting each other like billy goats. And, you know, these are two guys that can wrestle, but they would do anything, you know, they're going to do anything for the sport. And that comes to mind. Then, you know, to more modern history, having the Hardys come in to wrestle in the weekend to have a ladder match with the Bucks, you know, and Kevin Owens, Kevin Steen, and Generico in so many wars, and they got involved with Jimmy Jacobs and Carino and Tyler Black. There's just so many great matches over the years, man. There's a wealth of wrestling content, and at the risk of being self-serving, I think Ring of Honor completely changed the wrestling landscape.
Oh, it completely did. And my last question kind of revolves around that. Who do you feel were like the top, I don't know, let's just say top three. It might be less, there might be more, but let's just say three as a number. Top three most influential wrestlers in changing that landscape. Like, who are the top three most important wrestlers in Ring of Honor's history, or five or one or whatever you might think?
Well, we'll use these two as one. Number one, the Briscoes.
Right.
20 years. They never left.
Wow.
It's incredible, Chris.
Good point.
Where do you get longevity like that?
Yeah.
It doesn't exist.
Right.
Then Brian Danielson.
Mm-hmm.
He just, you know, I mean, Punk was only really there for 3 years, 4 years. Samoa Joe was only there for 3 or 4 years. But Brian was there from 2002 till 2009. So he's got to be on that list.
Right.
I mean, I want to say Samoa Joe, his career was short with not that long of this, but he's got to be mentioned. But and Seth, you know, Tyler Black, Seth Rollins. Right. I mean, phenomenal. And then that brings me to a more modern era with, you know, Adam Cole.
Yeah. Just
wonderful. Great matches. You know, I've been very fortunate to be with the company then, and, you know, being a fan of wrestling that, you know, respected the business, had such high, for the most part, high quality matches. And so the Briscoes, Samoa Joe, Punk, Danielson, Adam Cole, Kevin, you know, how do I leave Kevin Owens? You know, it's like, and there's probably a bunch of names that I'm leaving off the list here, but, you know, because it's a laundry list. I'm leaving Lethal off. It's a laundry list.
Last question for you. What's next for Kerry Silken now?
Well, I got to give a cheap plug to my podcast.
Yes.
Last Stop Penn Station. And I can't wait to be able to meet you and hang out with you to tell you some stories of my other life. I was voted, if there would have been a vote, I was the most unlikely guy to succeed. I went to college for a semester and majored in pinball and joint rolling. I had a brief career at working with club bands. We're talking about 76 to 81, the New Jersey, New York, Long Island club scene, cover bands. But it was huge at the time. I was a lighting guy. The drinking, you know, which sort of played back into Ring of Honor. But anyway, back then, the drinking age was 18. No one gave a shit about anything. And there was a million good rock clubs. It was a golden era. You know, that's when Asbury Park also was huge. But then, as I mentioned in my text, I discovered cocaine. And I've had a lifelong struggle, not with substances. You know, once an addict, always an addict.
Right.
And but I wound up, I couldn't hold a job. So I wound up hustling, learning how to hustle tickets on the streets of New York City. I'd been around the city. I knew a few guys. And I started my career as a digger, D-E-I-G-G-E-R. You know what that is?
No.
Someone who stands online all night for $40, $10 a ticket to buy Elton John or Neil Diamond or Metallica ticket.
Right.
Yeah. So I started as a digger. I had like a ticket mentor, Freddie the Weeper, and I hustled the streets of the city. I mean, when you're working with guys with names like Pickface Stanley, Blockhead, and the Mummy, I mean, there's some stories. And I finally cleaned up my act in the early 90s, and I got off the streets, and someone gave me a break working in a ticket office, you know, on the phones, just pre-internet, boys and girls.
Yeah.
You just have to stand in line for tickets. I'm a lot older than Chris, but he knows standing in line for tickets.
Right.
So I cleaned up my act. I had rave review tickets, my company. And if it wasn't for all that, there would have been no Ring of Honor. Although I might have died 100 times along the way. I was lucky with the lifestyle I was leading. But all those stories and all those characters, myself and my good friend Ian Riccoboni, the announcer for Ring of Honor, it's on Last Stop Penn Station podcast. And lastly, Mike G, you know him from Metal Maniacs.
Uh-huh.
Right? Metal Edge, Metal Maniacs, Mike G and Paul Gargano.
Yeah.
Mike G is working on my memoirs, Mike Greenblatt.
And great.
He put out his first book, which was a tribute to the 50th anniversary of Woodstock. So I'll be working on my memoirs. I'll be going to some wrestling. And I'm going to come see you in January in Newark.
That's great, man. I can't wait to say hi and meet up face to face. But what a great amount of stories, man. And congratulations on being one of the reasons why Ring of Honor became the legendary company that it did. And you're one of the guys, one of the few guys in the wrestling business that nobody ever says a bad word about. So that's something that you could be very proud of.
You never met Austin Aries.
Oh, amazing. Thank you, Kerry. It's been great talking to you, man. I look forward to seeing you in January.
You got it, man. Thank you so much.
Cheers, man. Thank you.